Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
It's Mail It In Friday.
Certainly there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
Yeah, whatever.
You just gotta keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Hazy is back on Monday. Gord Miller is here. It's hour number three of Overdrive on your Friday, TSN 1050.
I think I'm here Monday, too.
Are you? Nice.
Monday and Friday next week.
Well, we will not cross paths. I am off on Monday, and I am off on Friday.
There you go.
I'm doing the Scott MacArthur show Tuesday to Thursday.
How ironic that Scott MacArthur would do the Scott MacArthur show.
At this time of year, though, it can get...
That was like King Hussein of Jordan dying in the King Hussein Hospital. Like, what are the odds of that? Got to be a billion to one.
Yeah. Happened to be the hospital closest to King Hussein at the time. So... Again, you accused me 10 or 15 minutes ago of not being a particularly good pitchman for this Blue Jays-Orioles series.
You're not, because you, A, had no enthusiasm.
Yep.
And B, you were being sarcastic about it.
All right, so let me attempt then to...
Now, that said, I'm not going near those games this weekend.
Put lipstick on this animal with...
Four legs and a curly tail.
Hooves.
And a curly tail.
The Toronto Blue Jays enter the unofficial second half of the season, 23.5 games out of first place. Okay? Boston has a 23.5 game lead on the fourth place Blue Jays. The Blue Jays have a 16 game lead on the last place Orioles.
Right.
I done me some math, Gord.
You have done so, and I know it's hard for you.
Yeah, I do, and I also can't speak English.
English is overrated.
The Orioles are 28-69 for a .289 winning percentage right now. Mm-hmm. If you multiply .289 by 162, you get 46.8.
Oh, 47 wins?
47 wins, 115 losses, and that was the pace, well, that is the pace they're on, but they have traded Manny Machado.
Right.
So they are a worse team right now, and if you combine the wars... The wins above replacements of all current Baltimore position players.
Okay.
Sans Machado, it comes out to -1.9.
What was Machado's war?
Just give me a second to look it up very, very quickly.
It would be high.
He was easily their best player, having a very good year, and as you could tell, it didn't matter. Typing in Baseball Reference, Manny Machado, his wins above replacement statistic for this year. 2.9, so he's been worth 3 wins to his team.
Oh, I thought it'd be higher than that. What's Mike Trout? Mike Trout's like...
Oh, God. Mike Trout is like the war god.
So, sorry to ask you that, but I just... Yeah, so here's what I think about, and this is an odd thing to think. I remember talking to Pat Tabler, my former Blue Jay broadcast partner, about...
Good man.
Yeah, very good man, about, you know, the Cubs lost 100 and... It was 120 games that year, that awful year.
Like he would have been playing for them? Well, so this would be like the late 70s, early 80s type thing?
Whatever they lost, 115, 120 games. He was in the minors. How do you feel if you were in the minors for Baltimore right now?
Well, this is the thing, Gord.
They're the worst team in baseball.
Until,
and it's not even close.
But until they made,
and you can't play for them.
But until they made this deal, this was the big problem for them. Until they made this deal with Los Angeles... They had one of the worst farm systems in all of the game. So it wasn't just that they were atrociously
they've earned it.
Atrociously pathetic at the big league level. It's that you can't even pitch to your fans that there's hope 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the road. I will say this for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And the Yankees and the Red Sox are the big cloud that hovers over all of this because they look set up to dominate, especially the Yankees, for a long time coming. And as we know, they have the coffers to pony up for the elite young players that they wish to keep.
To keep.
But the Blue Jays do have a top 10 farm system now in baseball.
You're thinking Vladdy Guerrero, and you're excited about it, right? I mean, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. And
the thing is, The thing in sports is you're either selling the past, the present, or the future.
You're selling winning or hope. Another way to
right, yeah, you're selling winning or hope.
Say it.
So, what's the worst thing to be? Stuck in the middle. Not good enough to win.
The late 90s, early to mid 2000s yeah. Blue Jays.
Not good enough to win. Nothing coming that gets you excited. You just kind of swim around. If you're really bad, now, in baseball, it's not the same. If you're really bad in hockey, you're thinking about the first pick. The NFL, NBA, you're thinking about getting the first pick, winning the lottery, getting the first pick. But in baseball, if you're really bad, the draft is not necessarily your salvation.
No. You have to hit, though. The thing is, with the draft, too, it's not an off-season exercise.
But you're not getting Connor McDavid. You're not getting, you might, but can you afford him? No, with the salary.
The signing bonus deal. Yeah.
With the salary slotting. But, I mean, remember when Jabba Chamberlain dropped to the Yankees in the draft? I mean, everybody knew how good he was, but they were the team willing to give him a $16 million signing bonus. The Nationals finally ponied up, right?
Bryce Harper.
And Strasburg.
Yep.
Right? They paid Strasburg.
Could have been back-to-back drafts, if I'm
yeah.
not mistaken.
So they paid. And you know, it got to the point where you just had to decide. Like, I remember talking to, when I was covering baseball, talking to, you know, J.P. Ricciardi and others about it, and just how they couldn't give a pitcher who'd had Tommy John surgery in his, you know, in his junior year in college, or sorry, in high school, they can't give him $15 million. They can't do that.
Well, you can't screw that up. Yeah, you can't run that risk.
Because if he blows his arm again, you're on the hook for that, and they can't afford to do it. Now, there's a misunderstanding about baseball payrolls, because the Yankees had a big payroll and they won all those World Series. They spent most of that money to keep players. They kept their own guys. We've talked about this before, that Jorge Posada and Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter, those guys were all homegrown Yankees, Bernie Williams, and they paid to keep them. As opposed to going out and signing they weren't out signing a ton of free agents. They got some, but they weren't out. They weren't the Dodgers. The Dodgers' payroll is bloated by players from other organizations. Fair to say?
Little less so now, but
yeah.
But no, you're right. Yep.
You know, mostly guys that came from other teams.
But Andrew Friedman, since taking over 4 or 5 years ago when he left the Rays, has right. done a significant job of turning that around. The Dodgers, and that's why they could go get Manny Machado. They right. had one of the better farm systems yeah. in the game.
So it's just, it's really hard in sports. And it's funny because I've been talking to a lot of hockey management people this week just about, you know, leading up to the World Junior Camp and stuff like that, and, you know, about other sports. And they were talking about the Raptor deal. And one of the hardest things to be in sports is on the edge, but not quite yeah. good enough. So you got to sit there and look at your team and say, we're stuck. We've you know, and Jack Armstrong used the word plateaued. We're not good enough to win it all. So do we have to take a step back and a risk that we might not get back up there, right? Do we do that to try to break through and win the thing?
Well, and this is the conversation I have with some Jays fans who go on and on about some of the decisions Alex Anthopoulos made when he went and got Troy Tulowitzki and David Price. And it's and before that, it's Donaldson, yeah. of course. And that trade is a win. That trade is an absolute 100% slam dunk.
Does anyone think it wasn't?
No, I don't think so. But what yeah. I'm saying is that he went... Okay, you gave up Kendall Graveman, who is a bottom-of-the-rotation starter at best in the big league. Sean Nolan, who is and has not been in the A's organization for a while. And you gave up a kid shortstop, Franklin Barreto, who's 21, 22 years old and is starting to kick around the big leagues. But you can't worry about that. That trade's a win. Tulowitzki, what did you give up for him? Price, what did you give up for him? How many of those guys... You gave away depth. You gave away prospects. You traded a lot of internal pitching, prospect capital pitching from the Marlins and Mets deals in the offseason of 12 into 13, where you got Josh Johnson and Jose Reyes yeah. and R.A. Dickey and all that. Then the Donaldson trade, and then fast forward to the Tulowitzki and Price acquisitions. You gave up a lot of depth, but how many of those guys have actually gone on, at least to this point, to have bona fide big league careers?
Right.
Noah Syndergaard has. He can't stay healthy all the time, but he's a hell of a pitcher, throws 100 miles an hour. Outside of that, not many. And so when you have the opportunity to go for it, you dive in. Well, I don't think any Blue Jays fan logically would trade those two playoff runs, even though they didn't win the World Series.
You go for it for sure. The question is, when you're close, but you don't get there, do you then have to retool your team? The Washington Capitals are a great example of this. Washington got off to a terrible start last season, right? And they lost some significant players from the team that won back-to-back President's Trophies for the best regular season record, right? They lost, you know, guys that were important players for their team, that Marcus Johansson,
yep.
You name it, right? The guys that went on to play for other teams because they couldn't afford them anymore. But that reset helped them. And at the end of the day, it forced their hand into putting Tom Wilson in a more prominent role, to giving Devontae Smith-Pelly a chance, to, you know, Brett Conley playing more, to playing, you know, younger defensemen that were having a chance.
Yeah, because Alsner had moved on.
Because Alsner moved on, right? So all of that forced their hand, and it actually paid off for them. So that reset, whether they wanted to or not, was forced upon them. And I just think it's really hard, you know, if you're a team that, like, if you're the San Jose Sharks, you've been close. Like, you went to the final once. You've had a good team. You haven't had necessarily a great team. Letting Patrick Marleau go, you know, deciding not to give him what he was looking for, was a tough decision for them. But if you're not good enough to win, and you got to be realistic, like, the hardest thing to do is to realistically assess your team. If you miss the playoffs, are we a bad team or did we have a bad year? Are the Montreal Canadiens a bad team, or was Shea Weber and Carey Price hurt most of the year?
I think if they have those two players, they are better than they are, but I think they lack up the middle.
Right.
I don't think they're a playoff bubble team at best if Carey Price is throwing up a 930
save percentage.
Save percentage.
What's the point of being that? One team in history has won the Stanley Cup, finishing outside the top 10 in the standings.
But here, let me throw this idea at you and see what you think about it, because the fans who are upset about this have a personal connection to DeMar because he loved the city so much and he was so open. So I grant that. It could also be that the fringe basketball fan, I'm not talking about the Raptors diehards who can throw out stats and advanced analytics on Raptors players and players from around the league. I'm talking about the fringe fan who kind of dives in, dives out, all that stuff, may not be aware of how good a basketball player Kawhi Leonard is. Like, might have heard, top. Like, this guy, if this guy's healthy, Gord.
But you keep saying, but my problem.
Yeah, no, it's if. I know it's
always
an if. But the thing is we're going to get treated to something, even if it's only for 1 year. We're going to get treated to something watching that guy play night in and night out in a Toronto Raptors uniform if he's healthy.
Right.
But I think part of this isn't just the DeMar situation and personal feelings for such a beloved figure. It's that in this, and this is extremely subconscious, but it occurs to me, there's still the cloud of the bigger issue in the NBA, which is, okay, maybe Masai moved the goalposts by literally one series victory. If you go back a couple of years where the Raptors made the Eastern Conference Finals, just one more, where you get to the NBA Finals, but then there's Golden State. So we can sit here right now. If you said to me, Gord, I could see the San Jose Sharks winning the Stanley Cup next season, I would say, I don't think that's a crazy take. I don't think it's likely.
If they did it, you wouldn't be shocked.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Boston Bruins, the Washington Capitals, Pittsburgh, teams out west, Winnipeg, Nashville, like, we could go on and on and on about this stuff. We could negotiate and debate 8, 9, 10 relatively legitimate options to win the Stanley Cup. When it comes to the NBA, even though the Raptors have gotten Kawhi, and I applaud Masai Ujiri for doing it, I think it's brave, and I think it's even more impressive if this works out and he keeps Kawhi. If he convinces Kawhi, Kawhi comes here, falls in love with the city, becomes the flag bearer and the best ever player to don a Raptors uniform, then it becomes even more epic. But as we sit here today, there's still that thing over our shoulders where we realize Kawhi or no Kawhi, there's no NBA title coming to this city because there's no NBA title going anywhere but Oakland, California next June.
How do you know that?
Other than my never say never.
Right, because...
Steph could get hurt. Clay could get hurt. Draymond could get hurt.
We don't know. Boogie. I mean, they blew a 3-1 lead to Cleveland.
They did a couple years ago.
I mean, I'm just saying... Look, I'm not saying Golden State's not the overwhelming
Draymond
favorite.
Had his issues in that series. They kind of fell apart.
But my point is...
Pre-KD.
My point is, if the Raptors go to the NBA Finals, and they call it the Finals, which drives me crazy, but if they go to the NBA Finals, it's worth it. Take your shot. Like, if you go to the NBA Finals and get swept, are you telling me you'd rather not go to the Finals?
No. I'm not debating that. But what I'm saying is there is a bit of a hit of the break on the excitement level because it feels like the end game still isn't the title. Gord, because I could tell you this right now. If there wasn't a super team or two or maybe even three in the Western Conference and the Raps go and get Kawhi with the way that the Eastern Conference is right now, we'd be sitting here saying, oh my God, there's about six or seven legitimate title contenders in the NBA, and the Raptors are one of them. Right now, we're excited that Kawhi is here. We're eager to see him play. But we still, deep down, and I'd be thrilled to be proven wrong. Actually, I don't hate the Golden State Warriors, so I don't resent them in any way. Even though they can pick up a Boogie Cousins for $5 million when he could go make more somewhere else. But that's what winning does for you. It attracts players. But there's still that there's that blockage right there, which is, okay, so we might be one series better than we were 2 years ago.
Let me ask you this. If the Raptors go to the NBA Finals, say Kawhi Leonard is great. If the Raptors go to the NBA Finals, what are their chances of winning the championship?
Who are they playing? Golden State? A healthy Golden State team?
10%?
Well, it's hard to put a percentage on it, but...
Say 10%.
I would pick Golden State in no more than 5 games.
Okay, fine. What are their chances of winning it if they don't go to the finals?
Definitely zero.
Right, so
no, say, I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying is it pumps the brakes a bit on the excitement level.
I hear you.
Because you can't necessarily see the end game being the ultimate.
When you're the team that hasn't been able to break through... If you break through, that's an accomplishment. Like if your point to me is the Raptors have been stuck and have been hitting the wall in the playoffs, if they then win that third round series that they've never done, isn't that an accomplishment?
Well,
remember the Blue Jays, you're younger, remember, but the Blue Jays,
I do, yeah.
The Blue Jays in the 80s, right? I mean, coming up short in the playoffs before, not
my first year of Blue Jays memories is 85. So
85, 87, 89, all those years, right? So I think, if this pays off, it's a huge gamble. My question is the reward worth the risk? Is it, you're taking an awful chance on him. Does he want to be here? Is he healthy? All of that. If he does play well here, and he's healthy.
And he falls in love with the city.
I don't care if he falls. He doesn't fall in love with the city.
And they make the finals, and he looks around and says, this could happen again.
Maybe he's only here for 1 year. Maybe he's here for 1 year. And the young Raptors see this guy, and they're around him, and say, so that's what it takes.
But if he leaves,
yep.
And it seems likely... I'm not going to be revisionist and slam a trade that I haven't slammed yet. So I'm not going to be that guy because it's far too convenient. But then, Gord, the search begins for the next superstar because that's what you have to have. You can have a bunch of nice pieces.
Then you hit the reset, right? Then you're going to have to scale it back and say, okay, we took our shot. It didn't work out. So now we got to start over again. But you're going to have to do that anyway.
But you go... I mean, do you set it up and hope that maybe you can lure the Greek Freak in free agency a couple of summers from now? I mean, you do.
If you
need the superstar than one.
If your only hope is free agency, I don't see.
Yeah, but you don't have much of a hope in drafting a superstar in the 20s either.
Well, that's it. So if Leonard plays your 1 year and then leaves, then the next year is probably the tank year. Right? Then
that'll be a little nauseating, but you're right.
No, but I mean, how do you get good in the NBA?
You're not guaranteed to get good, but how do you approach the attempt to get good?
Steph Curry was drafted.
Yes, but the Golden State Warriors sucked for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for decades, Gord. I remember having a conversation.
When you talked about Bay Area sports, you hardly talked about
it. I remember having a conversation with a buddy. This got to go back 15 or 20 years. Must have been college, something like that. And I said, I can't remember even why this came up, but it just occurred to me. I said, big four sports in North America, NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL. Who or which, in your opinion, is the most irrelevant franchise out of the big four in North America right now? Granted, we're in Ontario, Canada, so our opinions may vary from somebody else. And he said, you got to give me some time to think. I just said, I threw out three words, Golden State Warriors. And he thought about it, and he's like, yeah. Like, because the only thing that happened in Golden State for like 30 years was Latrell Sprewell going for P.J. Carlesimo's throat.
Yep.
So it took a long time. But then Steph came along, and Clay came along, and Draymond came around. I mean,
a question for an NHL team like Detroit: can you get yourself back to the top without ever hitting the bottom? Because they haven't been that worst team in the league, pick first overall team yet. Can you do it? Because if you look at recent Stanley Cup champions...
Do you even try to? Because there's no guarantee you're going to get the top pick.
Right. So look at recent Stanley Cup champions, right? Washington, Ovechkin, Pittsburgh, Crosby. Go back to Chicago, Kane, first overall, right? L.A., Doughty, Kopitar, right? I mean, Boston. Now, a little different for Boston in that they don't necessarily have the high pick, but they also have a core of guys they drafted.
Well, and Boston also did the one thing that we talk about often not working. And it goes back a few years from when they won the Cup, but Chara in free agency was a huge deal.
It was a huge deal for them.
And he was also 27 when he signed as a free agent in Boston.
But they drafted Bergeron, they drafted Marchand.
Yes.
I mean, you know, a core that they drafted. So can you do it without hitting rock bottom? And the answer in hockey is probably not. In basketball, you probably can. Cleveland won Cleveland won their championship with LeBron, who they did draft but left and came back.
And only came back because he didn't like being the heel and was from northeastern Ohio.
Yeah. So, you know, can you do it without really hitting rock bottom? And I suppose you can in baseball because their draft isn't the same. But in hockey, for sure, you probably have to hit rock bottom. In order to...
Well, let's go back. I mean, let's talk about the recent World Series champions. The Houston Astros absolutely cratered. I mean, it was hideous.
Gordon, they were. I mean, in 2012, 2013.
And 2014, they were 100-plus lost teams.
Yeah.
The Chicago Cubs, Theo Epstein got in there after the 2011 season, took over. They tore it down. They lost 101 games in 2012. Lost, I think, and I know this because I cheer for them, lost 96 games in 2013. Slowly but surely got better until Joe Maddon and those guys came in and they started making the playoffs in 2015. Kansas City Royals?
Terrible.
Sports Illustrated did a big spread on them in like 2011 or 2012, predicting that the Royals would win the World Series in 14 or 15. And of course, they did go to back-to-back and win one. San Francisco didn't stink. They didn't suck. But they did win three World Series.
They also drafted, I mean, Buster Posey.
Yeah, Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, so those are home. I mean, so baseball's a little different in that your homegrown players don't necessarily come from the top of the draft.
Yeah.
Like, how often is the player picked first in the baseball draft the best player?
Ask the Houston Astros who took Mark Appel, and the Chicago Cubs took Chris Bryant second overall in... I think 2013.
Yeah. So, but so
not a guarantee.
But back to the point, though, it's the hardest thing to do in sports is to be objective about your own team and don't get emotional. Don't be emotional about it.
Don't get attached to players. Don't overreact to good results or bad results, one way or the other.
And understand and try to understand why you were successful. Like, so if your team in hockey shot 19% over the court, well, it wouldn't be 19%, but Colorado made the playoffs a couple of years ago shooting like 15%.
Well, what was
That probably won't happen again.
Using a specific player, what was William Karlsson's shooting percentage for Vegas this year when he scored
18%?
Like he's like, you know, no, but Gord, if he scores 22 goals next year, everybody's going to say, well, why is this guy terrible after a 40-goal season? Well, it could just be that his shooting percentage is back down to about 9-10%.
So then you got to decide what to do when you sign him, because is he a 42-goal guy, or did he just have a great year? And that's the hard thing to do, and it's really tough to do, and especially when you drafted a player. Like, it would be very easy to be emotional about DeMar DeRozan. You drafted him. You saw him grow up. He's so popular here. It's hard to ignore that. But what managers say is try to picture the players without numbers on. They're just generic. You don't know who they are. And then try to figure out who the better ones are.
And here's why, to flip it back to Masai, I don't think he overreacted, is because I think he already had a lot of preconceived beliefs and notions about his current group based on previous years' experiences. And he did give Dwayne Casey and that core the quote-unquote culture reset year, right, where they did win 59 games. They strayed from iso ball, started to move the ball a little more, started to, you know, from a volume point of view, throw up more three-point attempts. They changed their game. He gave them a year. The result was still totally unsatisfying in the end, the way that it happened. And that's when, okay, this affirms what I believed, and now we've got to pivot.
And I think that the one thing that the Raptors are becoming is a team that has to be responsible for the results, because they're not the nice Raptors anymore. They're not the second cousins to the Leafs. They're not the, you know, get a standing ovation when you lose the playoff series like they did to Cleveland. And so now it becomes, it's not okay if the Chicago Bulls are a terrible team. People will lose their jobs, and they have to make changes. And it's not okay if you're the number one team in town if you're no good. And the Raptors are starting to act like a grown-up basketball team. Right, they're not a tourist attraction anymore.
They're president of basketball ops, and we had Bruce Arthur in earlier in the week. I mean, that cojones, man. But
they got to win. They're charging big league prices.
Absolutely, they do.
They're charging, like, it's not $10 anymore to sit in the upper deck in the Sprite section, right?
Right. Well, you were saying what it cost you to go to a game or two this year.
It didn't cost me, but it cost the person that brought me.
Yes, the individual who was being nice to
invited me to the game and presented me with tickets.
Correct.
But they're charging big league prices, and with that comes big league expectations, and fans will start booing if the thing's not going right. And right, it's a culture change for the Raptors, and it's great. It's overdue.
I just wish there wasn't that Golden State cloud.
Isn't it? But
can't worry about it. It can't
just
change it.
It just does,
you just wish it wasn't there.
The Leonard deal does feel like a reach.
Who knows?
You traded a sure thing for a very unsure.
Maybe it ends happily.
You keep saying maybe and if.
Of course. Well, what am I going to come on the air here and say? I can guarantee you that Kawhi Leonard is going to sign a 5-year contract extension
because
with the Toronto Raptors
are going to make
next
you personally
summer.
Are going to make him feel welcome in Toronto.
I am. Kawhi, wouldn't I?
I'm going to send somebody else.
Kawhi, wouldn't I welcome Leonard to
respect,
Toronto?
With due respect, given your sales skills, I'm going to send somebody else.
Dude. I pretty much guaranteed a kick-ass weekend for the Blue Jays down at the Dome. They got a 16-game lead in the division on the team they're playing. How much better do you have to be than the team you're playing if at this time of the year you got a 16-game lead on them? Jays are going to kick some ass this weekend, pal. Boom, and there may be a giveaway. A fanny pack with a Blue Jays logo on it or something, or Marcus Stroman bobblehead. You're just blank, 1,000-yard Gord Miller stare. you've been waiting. That's how this show's going to end in about a half hour. Skip the Dishes is presenting you Overdrive today. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Thank you to our friends at Skip the Dishes for bringing us food from our friends at Little Greek. It's Scott MacArthur. It's Gord Miller. It's Overdrive. TSN 1050. It's Scott MacArthur and Gord Miller, Overdrive, TSN 1050. Hang in there if you're on the northbound 400 headed to Cottage Country or on the 401 eastbound heading to the 35-115 to get to the Kawarthas. The reward at the end of the traffic nightmare is a cottage.
And look out if you're driving on Lawrence Avenue West.
Have you Google mapped?
Yes.
The route home. Okay.
Yeah, so Lawrence Avenue West between 7:30 and 8 o'clock. Because I'll be riding my bike. So please don't run over me.
Are you going to go McCowan to Lawrence?
No, I'm going to go McCowan to Ellesmere.
Yes.
Ellesmere across, then down some road through a park, and down to Lawrence, then across Lawrence, and then down Duplex.
There's a road called Duplex?
You don't know about Duplex? Duplex Avenue is the greatest way to get north in Toronto.
It's a block west of Yonge Street.
It's fantastic.
Apropos of nothing, Avenue Road is a great name for a major artery in the city.
Let's name that after some. Can we change the name? Like
the guy who named Avenue Road.
It was Friday.
Yeah, it was Friday.
Yeah.
He's starfished on his couch, Dorito powder in the chest hair going.
It was 100 years ago.
Are you saying that there were no Doritos 100 years ago? I'm glad I live now.
See, one of the many reasons things are better now. if you're driving between like 7:30 and 8:15 on Lawrence Avenue going west, just please don't run over me.
Well, respect all cyclists.
Yes.
That's the best message possible.
Ever been doored on your bike?
No, I have not.
I was.
No, I'm not a frequent cyclist, and I will be even less frequent after
the back injury.
Severe injury. And it's been all I can do to get back, Gord. I just want to throw that out there.
And you're a gritty warrior.
Yeah, thank you very much. Barry Horowitz pat on the back.
Yeah. I got doored once, and I was very, very lucky.
This is when somebody parks on the side of a street, opens their car door.
And hits you as you're cycling by.
Yeah.
But it was a Camaro with the window down. So Camaros didn't have a frame around the window. So I just went over the door and tumbled onto the concrete.
Oh, my goodness.
But otherwise, you hit the frame of the door and you stop.
See, the one thing I've started to do if I park on the side of a street, just because bike lanes, depending on what city street you're on, they're designed differently and located differently, I just always check the mirror now. It's like, just make sure there's nobody coming. That's the least I can do. Yeah. Try to be cognizant of my surroundings.
It's scary. I got hit by a car on my bike once. Yeah, that wasn't fun.
No. If you can avoid that, it's good.
It sent me flying onto the guy's lawn. He turned to go into his driveway, didn't see me, and hit me, and sent me flying onto his lawn. And
I mean, if there's any grace in that, it's that you landed on grass and not sidewalk or concrete of the road.
It's dangerous. I mean,
no doubt.
And, you know, cyclists have been killed in Toronto, and it's, you got to share the road, man. We got to, you know.
You asked me last segment, because we were talking about the Orioles and Manny Machado and his wins above replacement. You just said, hey, for the hell of it, what's Mike Trout's war? What's Mike War's Trout? I can look.
Rainbow.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Ba-dum-boom. Wait. There we go. Not bad. Mike Trout's war this year, 6.8. So he's we are a little more than halfway through the season. We've got 2+ months left, and he's already worth 7 wins to his team. Which got me to thinking, with LeBron James, Mike Trout, and LeBron is obviously a much bigger brand, has a much larger profile. Do we truly understand and appreciate greatness when it's before us? Or do we have a tendency in hindsight, like you're going to tell your grandkids in 20 years, Gord, you should have seen Mike Trout play live. Do we truly appreciate it?
I don't know if we appreciate how great Mike Trout is, because he's not a highlight reel player. Right?
He's just great at everything.
He's great at everything. He doesn't... All he does is beat you.
The things that he does, to the naked eye, maybe are not... I mean, when he climbs the wall and scales to make a catch, that's one thing. But I'm talking about, like, you got like a 92, 93 mile an hour sinking fastball, and he's able to go down to his ankles with a short and shrift swing and and hurl it 410 feet over the left center field wall. I mean, not many guys can do that.
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, I'm a tennis fan, and I don't know if we appreciate this era in men's tennis.
Federer.
Djokovic.
Nadal.
Murray. And throw in Murray there if you want. How great this has been.
Here's a name, okay, sticking in the tennis line. Set aside gender. Serena Williams is one of the greatest athletes
absolutely
who has ever lived.
Yes, absolutely.
Ever lived. Man, woman.
Unquestionably.
Do we recognize that?
I don't know. And it's weird because there hasn't been the same warmth towards Serena. And, you know, you can ask yourself if it's racial. You know, she threatened to stuff a ball down a linesman's throat at the U.S. Open. But John McEnroe, you know, did all kinds of things when he played that were worse than that.
Jimmy Connors.
I mean, yeah, I mean, she's dominant. She's brilliant. The problem for Serena is that she's been too dominant. There's been times when some players have pushed her, but Federer has Nadal and Djokovic, right? They push each other. The problem with men's tennis before Federer and those guys came along was it was Pete Sampras killing everybody, right?
Except on clay. But you're right.
Except on clay. But Pete Sampras just
Agassi was a bit of his foil, but
yeah, but you know,
but not yeah.
So, but I mean, they weren't.
Whereas the women's game was Seles and Graf,
yeah,
and like if Sabatini, I might be missing the mark there a little bit.
But I mean, yeah,
there was more competition on the women's side at that
and
time.
Now it's just so one-sided. There's one great player. When she plays in a tournament, you got a tournament, and when she doesn't, you got a lesser event. And I'm with you. I don't know if we really appreciate. I find it funny. I remember sitting at a game one time, and the fans the broadcast booth was in the stands, and they were booing the crap out of Sidney Crosby, and thinking like, "You're going to tell your grandchildren you saw him play." Like that's how great he is.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't generational know if player. Like, I was in Edmonton in the 80s, and I saw that team play 500 times in person. I don't know if people there realize what they were seeing. How could you know?
Yeah, you can know it better now.
I mean,
when you compare it to a lot
Gretzky,
of what you
Messier,
see.
Gretzky, Messier, Anderson, Curry, Coffey, Fuhrer. I mean, she's incredible. And people leaving the game, you know, with 3 minutes to go, up a goal to get to the car faster.
Gordon?
Yes.
If there's a convenience store on your route on your bicycle home,
yes,
you're going to want to stop in and play the Proline ticket that I'm going to throw out there after the big night I had last night.
You're due.
Where I may have gone 0-3, but we won't talk about that. We'll get to my Proline.
I warned you.
And I was happy because my Cubbies won, even though I voted it or picked against them. All right. We'll get to my Proline best bets. It's Scott MacArthur. It's Gord Miller. It's Overdrive. TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. Time for today's Best Bets brought to you by Proline. I'm on the Blue Jays as the home plus, the Dodgers as the visitor in Milwaukee, and the A's at home over the Giants in Interleague Bay Area play. $20 pays you $88.20. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement before you wager. Get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. Proline, get way into the game. I was waiting for your reaction. You were just going to slag me for that Proline ticket.
No, it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. You seem very enthused.
Yeah.
Confident that's a winner.
Best war in history. Best single season wins above replacement. Tim Keefe. 1883, 20.2.
You don't care about Tim Keefe.
No.
This is what you want to get.
Number two, old Hoss Radburn in 1884, 19.4. The best since World War II? Dwight Gooden.
No kidding.
13.3, 1985.
The 85. So that was the year before the World Series.
Yeah, before the World Series.
Man, he was unreal.
Yeah.
19, 20 years old, he broke in with the Mets.
So a pitcher worth 13 wins above replacement.
That is crazy. You know, I'd be interested, and I don't think we're going to have the time, but Roger Clemens war with the Blue Jays. He might have been 10 wins per season in his 2 years with Toronto in 97 and 98.
Roger Clemens war, 12.2 with the Red Sox.
20 with the Blue Jays, which was only over two seasons, would be my guess.
Never, 11.9 one season with the Blue Jays.
Okay.
Yeah, so 20 over 2 years. Yeah.
Incredible. All right, you are back on Monday.
I'm back on my bike.
You're going to cycle home and play my Proline ticket. Brian Hayes back in the chair on Monday afternoon at 4, so he'll chat then. I'll talk to you Tuesday at 1 o'clock.